This is NHL Radio.
Blaming all on my roots, I showed up in boots and ruined your black tie affair. The last one to know, the last one to show, I was the last one you thought you'd see there. And I saw the surprise and the fear in his eyes when I took his glass of champagne. And I toasted you, said, honey, we may be through, but you'll never hear me complain.
Looking way inside the National Hockey League, this is NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice.
And welcome to the program. Mike Ross in for Bill Clement. And we got Mike Murphy and Colin Campbell in for Gary Bettman. Gentlemen, welcome. Who's the Garth Brooks fan?
Right here. I just jumped off the tractor about 2 hours ago, plowing snow on the farm. Little Garth Brooks, and it's apropos. Murph's, he won a two-pack.
No. Neil Young, but they didn't seem to have any here in this Canadian
I'm sure we can dig up some Neil Young for you. That's the great thing about this hour, guys, is you guys run it. It's about you, and it's about the fans getting their questions and comments into you, but we also like to have you guys sort of spin the tunes as well. Either of you ever wanted to be in radio at any point in your life?
Not a chance. Me, anyways, I don't know about Murph. Yeah, it usually means that you lost your other job.
It usually does. You're absolutely right.
We're happy doing what we're doing right now. I think, as Coley said, radio's a lot of guys are heading to radio or TV who don't have jobs. So it's neat what we're doing.
And it's getting crowded.
It is getting crowded and overpopulated. All-Star Weekend, guys. So we're just back from Montreal, and I was saying, Murph, off the top that this was a big success. I mean, the fans were absolutely tremendous, and at all the events, I mean, you really got a sense in talking to people that it really was a great event in Montreal. It was important to Montrealers to have it there.
No question about it. The NHL, and particularly the city of Montreal, did an outstanding job. The people of Montreal, the fans of Montreal, really bought in. It's a corporate exhibition. It's an event. It's a lot of fun. People enjoyed it. You saw people laughing at the game and getting a lot of pleasure out of the skills contest. The game itself was very competitive, yet non-physical. And that's always a criticism we get, that the game's not physical, it's not real hockey. Well, this is an exhibition of the skill and the talent our players have, or the NHL players have. And I think for that purpose, it's a neat event. And as I said, the people of Montreal who hosted it were tremendous. I know Coley and myself went out to dinner and one evening, and everybody was willing to help us to get to where we're going, to get back from where we're going. At the restaurant we were at, so they really celebrated all those stars being in town, and I think it did the NHL a world of good. It was just a great weekend.
And Coley, I mean, you could tell from the players, whether it was the young stars or the NHL All-Stars. I mean, those guys that were there, they wanted to be there. They wanted to have that interaction with the fans.
Well, I think once you got to the All-Star game, and to Montreal in particular, Montreal is a great hockey city. Fans bought into it. The anniversary of the Canadians this year is something to grasp. The Canadians are having a number of celebrations throughout the season. Of course, the All-Star is not always an easy event to put together from a number of different aspects. From hockey operations aspect, we're charged with putting the team together after the starting lineups are voted. And there's a little bit of controversy about the voting this year, but once we're handed those starting players, then we fill. And my boss's wishes, Gary Bettman's wishes, are that every team be represented, and we try to do that. You leave a lot of good players off when you do that, but it's a necessary thing. It's an all-star team. You try to get all teams represented on that. At the All-Star game in Montreal. Once the players get there, though, particularly in Montreal, as Murph mentioned, you see Henri Bouchard, Guy Lafleur being interviewed in one corner, Jean Beliveau walking around. You're in the new arena. Unfortunately, it's not the Forum, but all things must pass. And but still, there's a lot of history already. The pictures they have up on the wall, and you can't help but get into it. The weather, it was cold. It was hockey weather.
Yeah.
And again, as Murph mentioned, the fans were into it. You know, they'd stop. They'd want a picture with you. Even an old hockey guy like myself, and then you just mentioned, well, you guys are going to get LeCavier, and they tell you what they wanted for him, the trade they were going to make, and so they were pretty interesting to talk to the fans. So it was a pretty fun weekend.
We were sitting in the box watching the skills, and it was the speed skating drill, and four or five players had gone, and Cogliano went, and of course he got a great start. And there was a roar from the crowd. And Coley said to me, looked at me and says, they already know this is the fastest guy. After halfway around the course, and he sure enough, he was. So,
and there's no clock. The clock had broke.
That's right, yeah.
The first player skated over the wire. So
did he? Is that what happened?
Right, he skated over the wire. So it's not like it was something that broke down. He skated over the wire and cut it in half. And as Murph said, you know, the fans sensed the first corner without a clock. And I said, look, these guys, these fans are smart hockey fans. They know this guy is going to be the fastest.
We want to give you a chance to get in on the conversation here, and you can do it one of two ways. You can email the show. It's nhlhour@nhl.com, or you can give us a call at 1-877-645-6696. 1-877-645-6696. When you talk about the All-Star Game and how it is a skills display, you will hear people talk about how they feel it could be a little bit more competitive. And what's the response to that? Why is that game not more competitive or more like an NHL regular season game? Because clearly there are a lot of those guys who have a lot of offensive talent but can also play a slightly physical game.
Well, the true nature of our game is it's a collision game, it's a contact game. And when you take that element out, and we take that element out in the All-Star game for good reason, we don't want players getting hurt. These players are the most valuable players on their individual teams. We can't risk injury. They're going to go back and play the remainder of the season trying to get their team into a spot into the playoffs or higher in the standings. So we don't want to risk injury, and we do everything to avoid it. And I think that's taken the contact and the collision and the battling out of the game as we see most NHL games and what we enjoy about hockey. But we don't see the true skills that these players have. We just see small tips of them in games. But when you can see them and they have the time and the space to know that they can execute the flips with the puck and the backhand dekes and some of those skills that we saw, knowing they're not going to get hit, I think that's a neat experience. And I think that's what we've got to accept and say, hey, this is a neat experience to see the skills of these players and how talented they really are. Because I know Coley and myself, we had Kovalev back in New York years ago, and he could do these things in practice. And we just marveled at how he could pick up a puck with his stick on his forehand, backhand. And that was years ago, and really he's just getting recognized for how great a skillful player he is, and what he did at the All-Star game was neat. So I think if you don't have collision, if you don't have contact, if you don't have battles, you're not going to have the true essence of our game. But this is more of an exhibition. It's more an event. It's fun for players to get there and show their skills, and I think that's what we're going to promote.
We invite you to join us here on the NHL Hour, 1-877-645-6696, 1-877-645-6696. We've got Colin Campbell with us, the Senior Executive Vice President of Hockey Operations, and also Mike Murphy, Senior Vice President of Hockey Operations. And guys, for the folks out there who may not be 100% clued in as to what you guys do within hockey operations, because there's so many departments and so many divisions on teams and within the league, what exactly is hockey ops?
Well, we like to think it runs the league.
Okay.
If we didn't have hockey ops, we'd be in trouble. Seriously, hockey operations, the hockey operations department for the National Hockey League, we're involved in everything that happens on the ice, from officiating to the rules to discipline, video review during games, the ice conditions, We're in charge of everything that happens in the arena. And on a nightly basis, we watch every game that is televised. If there's issues, if there's situations, that's our job, the games. And accordingly, we deal with all the general managers. For the most part, I usually deal with the general managers. Murph handles a lot of the issues with the coaches. And we hope to stay in touch with the game itself and to make sure that everything's running smoothly. And anytime there's hiccups, we hope to smooth those out.
So, I mean, obviously, people will know that your name is synonymous with sort of league discipline. And when something goes down, usually you're the first person that people are sort of screaming at and saying, you know, Coley Campbell, you've got to come down hard in this situation, or you've got to be lenient in this situation. Are you automatically the first point man when something comes down the pipe? I mean, guys are watching the games that are back in the war room. They make the call to you if you're not there.
Well, I'd like to take credit for being on top of everything, but Mike Murphy logs a lot more time than I do. He's in the room more often than I am. I'm other places watching games, but for the most part, our guys in the room will catch it. That's our job, to watch every game. And we try to frustrate teams from reporting to us a discipline or a situation they think where their player has been wronged. You get into rivalry situations, competitive situations, when you have teams reporting on discipline. Our people that are assigned to watching every game, monitoring every game, they will let us know if there's a situation in that game that we need to look at. They'll get it to me. They can email it wherever I am in virtually seconds. And Murph and I'll discuss it. We'll discuss it with the guys in our room. If it happens between, say, normally 7 and 9, 30, 10 o'clock, we kind of delay it a little bit until things slow down in the room, the games slow down. We then look at it. We look at the situation. We look if there's any priors in the game, what led up to it, the individual player himself, or what his record is. So we go over everything, and we try to treat it fairly. We try to treat it the player properly. We check to see if he's a repeat offender. And you're right when you led into the question, you know, should I come down hard? Should we be lenient? And, you know, we want to keep the toughness of the game, but we want to keep more or less the stupidity out of the game and the crazy plays. So I think discipline has changed over the years. Actually, I shouldn't say I think. I know. In discussing it with Mike, unfortunately or fortunately, you know, unfortunately for life, we've been around too long. And fortunately for our experience, it may be good. But, you know, we played in the 70s on through and into the 80s and coached, and we've been through every aspect of the game over the last four decades, and we have the good fortune to bounce things off Jim Gregory, who's been in a lot longer than us, was manager at least for 10 years, was in the Toronto system for a long time, and is a good hockey man. And the game has changed as far as violence goes. Players don't use their sticks as much. They've settled down. Really, you watch everything. You see everything that's happened. If you've got something that happens in Edmonton tonight, Calgary, Tampa, Dallas, you're seeing it in virtually minutes on TSN or Sportsnet here in Canada. ESPN will show it. Some sporting station will run it. So it's pretty tough to hide one of these things. So the game has changed in that aspect. I think it's a much safer game to play. When we see things out there now, people say, oh boy, that's a dangerous game. Well, it's Mike and I can tell you that with our experience, it's anyways, I think it was a lot more dangerous to play in the 70s and 80s.
I got a lot more questions for you, but I know we've got a lot of callers that have questions for you too, so we're going to open the phone lines now. 1-877-645-6696. Why don't you bring on our first caller?
Well, it looks like it's Bill from Tallahassee, Florida.
Go ahead, Bill.
Hello there. One second. Hello there. Sorry about that. My question is mainly for Colin Campbell, since I know he handles a lot of the discipline, or Mike Murphy as well. But my question is going back to the All-Star game. I heard and read online on the NHL.com site that the players were hurt and they could not be able to to attend the All-Star festivities, they had to be suspended for a game. And that kind of threw me for a loop because I know, of course, these are the star players and everything, and they want to try to get the teams into the playoffs. But I just don't understand the logic of this part, especially when I know that.
Okay, thanks a lot, Bill. I think we get the gist of the question there. And maybe next time, not call from the drive-thru. Yeah, well, you want fries with that too, Bill?
Well, Bill, that's a good question, and I think this has been a hot-button topic for the last week or so. It was over the years, we've in hockey operations, we filled with the All-Star team. And as I mentioned earlier on in the show, it's not an easy job filling. We've got a lot of good players out there, deserving players, and we use a lot of criteria. Teams that won the Stanley Cup last year, teams that were in the finals, so there would be two of those, Detroit and Pittsburgh. Obviously, we've got 12 players voted on leading into it. We've got your all-stars who seem to be all-stars every year. They're great players, Shane Doan, Joe Thornton, players like that, Scott Niedermeyer. You've got teams that are playing well this year. Boston, for example, San Jose. So we use all those kinds of criteria to put the team together. It's an all-star game, and there's some fans that travel to Montreal, fans from Montreal. People put out a lot to watch this game, not only in the arena but at home. And so there's a responsibility by the players and people from the league to play in that all-star game, to appear at that all-star game, and these guys who, you know, they get a lot back from the league too, these players. And so I think there's a responsibility. Now, Mike and I know as a coach, we know the other side. The coach's challenge is not to make that All-Star game exciting. His challenge is the rest of the season. This is, if you look at the standings right now, everybody's got a battle, and every coach's responsibility is to make the playoffs, to play well in the playoffs, and chase that Stanley Cup. So if I'm a coach, I want my player resting. I don't want him at the All-Star game, unless maybe there's the odd time you send the player there and he gets a boost out of it, he gets a kick out of that All-Star game. But for the most part, that's their challenge. Well, our job and responsibility from a league standpoint is we have this All-Star game, we've got a responsibility to the fans and a number of other partners to put on a good All-Star game. And so we made, you know, the commissioner, Gary Bettman, stated to the managers last February from here on in, if you're chosen to the All-Star game, whether you're selected or picked through the process we have in place, computer voting, whatever it is, then you have an obligation unless you're injured. And you don't know on injuries. All of a sudden, certain injuries become, you know, major injuries until, you know, the next game, and all of a sudden they go away. So there was no, you know, no gray area. You're going to have to miss a game prior or a game, the first game after the All-Star game, if you can't perform in the All-Star game because of injury. And to be fair to all the players coming to this All-Star game who do commit, you know, the San Jose people had to travel a long ways. A lot of players make a commitment, so we can't pick and choose. So that was a dilemma. And unfortunately, for a guy like Nicholas Lidstrom, who's given at the office time and time again, I've traveled All-Star games with him through Detroit with his family. He's a great player, a great representative of our league. How many Norses has he won? 5, 6, 7, yeah. I don't know. An All-Star team the last 12, 13 years. Unfortunately, he got caught in that web. And they are both nursing injuries. A lot of players do nurse injuries or play as much as those guys do, Datsuk and Lidstrom. But they got caught in the web. And, you know, it was what it was when it came up. And the Red Wings handled it properly. And, you know, they got a point out of last night's game, and hopefully the rest will do them well going into the rest of the season.
1-877-645-6696, the number to call to get a question in to Coley Campbell and to Mike Murphy. Why don't we take another call, Coley?
Okay, Ron from Boynton Beach, Florida. A Panthers question.
A Panthers question. Go ahead, Ron.
A Panthers question. Mr. Campbell, how are you tonight?
Pretty good yourself, Ron.
Very good. I'm just calling you. I'm a season ticket holder down here with the Panthers, and I'm on my way to the game tonight against Montreal. And just a quick call to compliment you on the play of Gregory. he has just been an unbelievable player for us this year. Tough and gritty and really has become a favorite of the season ticket holders. So I just wanted to pass that on and compliment you on his play.
Well, not too often in my line of work do I get any compliments, and I guess it's for Gregory, not me.
but I'll jump in and say one thing, and Coley's very humble about this, as is his wife and Gregory, but probably the resurgence of the Panthers, or one of the big reasons they've been an effective team this year, is they've put together a terrific checking line with Peltonen, Dvorak, and Campbell, and those guys draw the tough assignment of playing against the top line and the other team every night. And he's done an admirable job. And I know Coley doesn't want to dwell on it, and we'll move on, but credit is deserved by Gregory and that whole group down there. They've done a great job, and the Panthers are an improved team.
Well, with Montreal in there tonight, I happened to catch the last game down there. We usually try to catch one right after Christmas, my family, and I think it was like about 17,000 Canadian fans and 1,000 Florida fans. So I hope Ron yells loud tonight, because Montreal likes to catch Montreal people like to catch the Montreal Canadiens when they're down in Florida.
All right, let's take another call here on line two.
We got Pogi in Los Angeles. Pogi, go ahead.
Hey, guys, nice to speak to the upper echelon of the NHL. A comment and a question. The comment is it feels sort of like a Olympic break instead of All-Star break for me as a Kings fan, because it's been 8 days since the Kings played. But my question is, who governs or regulates the jerseys that the teams wear in the games? Because right now it's very difficult to tell whether it's a home game or a road game, because there's no standard or anything. Some days they're wearing the white, some days it's the third jersey, and it's a mess.
Well, there is a standard. This year you're to wear dark colors at home, so the visiting team wears white. However, we have changed over the years. To give our fans the opportunity to see all the sweater colors and all the different sweaters. And there is a third jersey, which the home team can wear and make arrangements if they travel with it on the road. So it's a team-by-team situation, but the predominant color at home is the dark sweater. And as I said, we've changed over the years. I know in my career throughout the NHL, we changed a couple of times. And it's always debated. It's always discussed. And as I said, there are third jerseys, so that's another caveat into the equation. But that's the basic color, is the dark jersey at home.
Has there been discussions of doing it the way the Ontario Hockey League used to do it, and go with one color at home for the first half and the other color at home for the second half of the season?
This was a hotly debated topic by the team presidents, who really get involved in this. It's their job to sell the game, sell the jerseys. There's some teams that really, I call them sweaters. That's what they call them in Canada, jerseys in the United States. But some teams really are passionate about the color of the sweater they wear at home. And some teams are there's organizations that want to wear dark and organizations that want to wear white. In the old days, the teams really didn't care much about marketing the sweaters. There was no sales of hockey jerseys. Now it's a huge business, but in the old days it was all about the trainers, and the reason you wore white at home and darks on the road is the trainers, the whites would get more dirty on the road on road trips.
Oh, okay.
It was easier to use your, and so that was the simple reason why they had darks on the road. And I personally, myself, that's not a bad idea. I like to see different colors come into to your home arena, and then the odd times wear your sweater for your fans. So if it's half and half, that's fine. You know, I know a lot of teams like to wear their third jersey, as Mike mentioned. Teams have third jerseys, and some are pretty neat. And sometimes this even happens too. We've had requests from teams to wear it more often than they should, or are supposed to, or allowed to, because the coach gets superstitious because they win a couple games in those jerseys. So whatever works for the coach, is all about winning when it comes to coaching.
We're going to take a quick time out here. When we come back, more of your phone calls at 1-877-645-6696. Colin Campbell and Mike Murphy here on the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice, XM 204, Sirius 208, and NHL.com.
If you want an in-depth look at the NHL, you're in the right place. This is NHL Hour on the Nation's Hockey Station, NHL Home Ice.
And for now, the home of Garth Brooks and Neil Young. Mike Murphy and Colin Campbell are in for Gary Bettman. I'm Mike Ross in for Bill Clement. It's the NHL Hour, Sirius 208, XM 204, and NHL.com. Taking your phone calls at 1-877-645-6696. And guys, before we jump back here to the phones, Coley, obviously a big topic of discussion over the last month and a half to 2 months has been fighting in the National Hockey League. Have you guys, through any meetings and such, made any progress towards changes to the way the helmet's worn or anything like that, or is it still at the discussion phase?
We haven't formally discussed it. There's been a lot of informal discussions amongst ourselves, and I haven't had a lot of discussions with general managers or coaches about the topic. We will discuss it at the managers' meeting in March, what we can do to alleviate whatever problems we think there are when it comes to fighting. Fighting seems to, it's like everything else in the game, you have to, I guess, stick handle around the checkers as they come. And when you have certain areas of the game that are getting checked, more or less, you stick handle around them which way you can. And for example, when Avery does what he does with Berger in the playoffs last year, you know, that's never been done before, and we deal with it. It's called interference. It's an unsportsmanlike penalty. So we let all the managers know at that point in time what that was, and in fighting now, you're getting, for example, players throwing their helmets off. Where did that start? Junior, I don't know. Buckets off, they call it. Why you take your helmet off, I don't know. You got it on there so you don't fall and hit the ice, and there's a good chance you're going to fall and hit the ice if you're in a fight. So we'll discuss all the aspects, going after guys who throw a legal check, a good check. A lot of things have popped up here in the last year, 2 years, and there have been a lot of rules over time, too, to take care of fighting. Back again when Mike and I played in the Stone Ages, there was bench emptiers. Mm-hmm. The penalties are huge now if you empty your bench. Third man in, we've got the instigator in the last 5 minutes, which is a crazy time to fight. How many times you've seen a good fight in the last 5 minutes? So there's a one-game suspension and a fine to the coach. So there's a lot of things that have quelled fighting and but yet still allow fighting. So we'll look at every aspect of fighting at the manager's meeting, and I'm sure we'll get some input, good input from the players as well.
Now, the other thing I know that you guys are looking at and have discussed are possible changes to the nets. Mike, where are you guys at with that?
Well, over the years, there's been suggestions to change the posts and the crossbars of the net as opposed to being round, to make them angular. So if you were to grab a coffee cup and squeeze it, that would be a little bit of the shape of the post, in the hope that shots that hit the post or crossbar would go in the net. So we put together a couple of nets in that type of a design with angular posts and crossbars, an official NHL net, and we were fortunate enough to be able to get them into a practice with the Maple Leafs and listen to the feedback from the goalies and from the shooters and from the coaches, and it was valuable information. We found that angle shots were more inclined to, if they hit the far post, would bounce out than if it was a round post. Straight-on shots mostly bounced in. Crossbar shots bounced in. Pucks came off the post hotter because there was less mass hitting the puck. So there were some valuable contributions made in the experiment. And what it was is basically a research and development part of our jobs. And to look at this, is this viable? Can we do it without risking injury to players? You don't want to change the net so drastically that it now becomes a sharp item if a player hits it as he's driving to the net to risk injury. So all in all, it was a successful experiment. I think we've got to present these findings to the managers and to the owners and to see where we go with it. If there's any foundation for changing or maybe experimenting with it in some type of an American League game or even in one of our own games. So that's kind of where we're at with it. It was a valuable experiment.
I got an email from someone the other day that said after that Buffalo-Edmonton game that there was no need to enlarge the nets or make any changes to the nets. They were just fine.
Well, you have nights like that when you're a team, and that was a tough one.
1-877-645-6696, the number to call to get in here and talk to Colin Campbell and Mike Murphy. Colin, why don't we take another call here?
Okay, we got Todd waiting for a while from New Jersey here. Todd?
Hey, hi, Todd. Colin. Questions for you. If you have a repeat offender, especially somebody who's done the same thing, say hitting from behind 3, 4, 5 times, and the guy finally cripples somebody on his 6th attempt, are you opening or is the league open to basically being sued by the injured player? Because in my mind, it seems like a lot of times the league doesn't come down hard enough on what the action is, just on what the result is.
I think there's, Todd, there's a number of criteria we use when we look at suspensions. Obviously, repeat offenders are a very important aspect to the suspensions. The players tell us, and we agree with them, that repeat offenders should be punished more severely. We look at the type of the hit, and if you do cause injury, then that's the criteria as well that we look at. So there's a number of criteria, and those are just two. Hits from behind, there's also aspects where players do put themselves in a tough area on the hits from behind. They turn at the last moment, they don't protect themselves, and players are just finishing their checks. So we get those a lot from the players who we have on our hearings that are being considered to be suspended for hits from behind. They'll say, I've been told to finish my check. I finished my check, and at the last moment the player turned into it. So, are we putting ourselves in a tough position legally if we haven't suspended players long enough? I think our players get suspended long enough, and a lot of the aspect of suspensions, one key aspect to suspensions that a lot of people ignore are the monies that players give up. I mean, Keith Tkachuk was suspended twice in one season, and each suspension was well over $400,000, almost $500,000. He gave up well over $900,000 in salary. Now, some people will say, well, he makes a lot, he can afford that, but that's a big hit. And so I think that's a key aspect to the suspensions are the monetary hit. And when you're a repeat offender and you get suspended, the equation on how the money you give up it changes. It's a lot more for a repeat offender than a first-time offender.
Is there, when you talk about suspending a player or if a player is fined for an incident, are there CBA implications as far as maximum that you can fine as opposed to maximum you can suspend?
Yes, the maximum you can fine a player if you decide it's just a fine and what he did needs a warning and perhaps a fine is $2,500. Then when you suspend him for games, let's say it's 3 games, those games are figured into an equation that uses his salary as well as the days in the season, which is 186. If he's a second-time offender, meaning a repeat offender, meaning if he's done something within the last 18 calendar months, then that equation still uses the number of games, if it's 2, his salary, but it goes to the games in a season, not the days, which is 82. So it's a much tougher, harsher hit in your wallet if you're a repeat offender.
Mike, let's take another call.
Scott from Los Angeles, you're on the show. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. This is actually for Colin Campbell. You know, you talked about R&D, and you know, I'm a big LA Kings fan. I would like to know, with all this talk about the Winter Classic and whatnot, I think you know what I'm going to say, is what about having a game come out to L.A., be it the Rose Bowl or any of these other facilities that are out here at an open winter game?
Well, we have an ice guru, and we bought our own rink. In Buffalo, we had the boards and glass, and we've added to that now. We can put on the whole show ourselves with the pipes and the generators, et cetera. And Dan Craig, our ice guy, is out of Edmonton, and wherever we have a problem with ice, he heads into that city, and he's the individual also that works with our outdoor ice machines and our outdoor game. Can we have it in L.A.? I think the temperature is around 50 degrees that we can deal with, and I'll let Mike speak to that, having played in L.A. for 15 years, and he still lives there and has a home there. And it'd be great if we could put it in a lot of places. And when I was with the Rangers coaching, we had an outdoor game in Vegas. It was pretty hot there. We played at night, and the ice wasn't great. And I don't think it would be good enough for an NHL regular season game. It was pretty slushy, but it would be interesting if the temperature was right on January 1st if you could play in L.A., Mike.
It would be great to do it. I'm not sure we can do it with the climate. I think that you spoke about a night game in Vegas, and I think that the ideal time for us to do a game on New Year's Day, and has been very successful, is 1 o'clock Eastern time, which would be 10 o'clock in the West. And your sun is just coming up, and by noon it'll be at its highest point and brightest point. So I think from a weather point of view, it would be very difficult. I think it's a great idea, and I know we've discussed it internally. Could we ever pull it off? It would be sure a neat location for players to play at, and the environment, especially with the Rose Bowl and all the things that are happening on that particular day. But I think that the temperature might be the one thing that works against us. And, you know, we're guarded every time we do an outdoor game, and we keep our fingers crossed and say our prayers that the temperature is going to be right, that the conditions are going to be right, and that the whole product comes off the way we want it to, because we are a victim of the weather.
1-877-645-6696. One more phone call before the break here.
Okay, we got Pat from New Jersey.
How you doing, guys?
Good, Pat. Yourself?
Good. I got two questions. One is, I have the NHL package and the center ice package also. I noticed in the winter games that the cameras were really low, and it really brought out the speed of the game. When I watch the center ice in the NHL, it seems like everything's up in the third level. The pictures are blurry, but also you don't appreciate the speed, and you only see about a quarter to half of the rink, so you can't see the shots going back to the point. I was just wondering why they can't get cameras low enough to show the whole game at that level. And I have one other question after you answer this one.
Okay, Pat. I guess the camera placement wouldn't vary for center ice and any other production. It's up to the broadcaster who's carrying that game, what cameras they use and what position they use. We sometimes complain in our office where the cameras are. We like some positions, we don't like others. The most important thing to us, and I know it's a question of money and availability, but the most important thing, I think, for hockey is to show it on high def. Even in our office, our guys just... all games every night aren't on high def. There's a lot more this year than there ever were before, but our guys fight to get the high def games to watch because it's so much more appealing to the eye to watch games in high def, and you see a lot more. So when we get to the point where we can carry all games in high def, I don't think you'll even care where the cameras are.
Yeah, I know, but it's just when it's down at ice level, it's like you're actually sitting at the game. And a lot of people I talked to said they don't watch hockey because you have to go to the game to appreciate it. They don't watch it on TV.
Well, the guy, we'll pass that along to John Shannon from our office. He's our TV expert. He's been in the business a long time. He worked for Hockey Night in Canada for years, and he works with all our TV carriers across the league. And I will mention that to him. Okay, Pat?
Yeah, I'd appreciate that. Now, my other quick question is, I love the game the way it's being called now with the hooking and all that, because it makes the skilled players come out. But some of the calls are so weak when they just touch the other guy's stick. And the other night with the Flyers against Thiemann, and he barely touched the guy, and they called a penalty and nullified the goal. And it seems like they're just picking on the Flyers, and they're getting so many penalties. And I watch a lot of games at night having those packages, and I see a lot of calls that they call on the Flyers let go on other teams. And I'm not trying to be biased, but I get so frustrated I turn the Flyers off and watch another game, and I can't even enjoy watching the team I love.
Well, Pat, we Mike and I played against the Broad Street Bullies in the early 70s, so we put those orders out to our officials to pick on the Flyers. We think it's time to pick on the Flyers. No,
really, because I keep hearing from Ranger fans that they're the ones being picked on.
Well, we hear from everybody that they're being picked on. You know, that's a constant gripe. You know what? the new enforcement of the hooking and holding, it when we first brought that in after the lockout, it was hard to take. But if you look back at a game pre-lockout now, I don't know how we played the game without that. And there are some calls, and the referees do try, and they are honest mistakes. You know, they'll see a stick hit a hand, and they'll thought it was a penalty. And you're going to get that, you know, with 1,230 games. But for the most part, you know, fans are adamant, they're passionate, and when they're watching their own team play and they'll see a penalty and they'll think it's soft, they'll think they're getting picked on. But I can assure Pat and all the Philly fans that every team has those questions or those concerns on any given night, and we try to be as fair as we can in every one of our 1,230 league games.
One more time out here. When we come back, more phone calls for Mike Murphy and for Colin Campbell. 1-877-645-6696. It's the NHL Hour on Sirius 208, XM 204, and NHL.com.
This is NHL Hour. It's not your typical hour of hockey talk, and it's exactly what you want. NHL Home Ice.
Welcome back. Mike Ross in for Bill Clement. Mike Murphy and Coley Campbell in for Commissioner Gary Bettman. It's the NHL Hour, Series 28, XM 204, and NHL.com. 1-877-645-6696, the number to call to get a question into the guys here. Murph, I got to ask you about, and it's an email that we got asking about camera angles, and more specifically when it comes to video replay, especially when it involves a high stick. It seems that the goal cam does not always give you the best of angles. So are you guys doing anything about that at changing you know, camera angles or adding cameras when you're looking at those nets or when you're looking at you know, the boards around the back of the back of the rink?
Well, to preface it, it's the most difficult call we have in video review is a high stick, and rarely can you get the puck, the stick, and the crossbar all in the same picture. And where exactly the stick is, where the puck contacts it, and we use all the camera angles that the TV people produce for us. Rarely does the overhead camera, which is our most valuable camera on most reviews, help you. It doesn't help you. So we tried to get around this to get the best possible information this way. We talked to the referee who makes the call, and we've asked them to parlay with the three teammates, the other officials on the ice, and say, okay, what's your call? He'll state his call. We've got a good goal. How did the other referees see this? And he might come back to you and say, two of them said it was a good goal, and one of them didn't get a good picture of it. So with that type of information, we go and make our decision. And it's not a decision that we rarely overturn because it's difficult to get a perfect view of that stick being above the crossbar or below the crossbar, especially when it's at the crossbar. So that's how we rule on it, and for the most part, we are very consistent in that way.
All right, 1-877-645-6696. Coley, let's take another call.
We have Howard from Longwood, Florida. Question, Howard.
Good evening, guys. Good afternoon.
Listen, how you doing?
I've only been to 8 hockey games, NHL games in my life, but I have spent over 800 minor league games in my life, and I enjoy the sport, and I But my question is basically, and it's very a unique question, is that when the league first started this year, Tampa and the New York Rangers left to go someplace in Europe. Wouldn't you feel that it would be better for the sport, whether it be North America or Canada, to keep those games in the United States and to maybe utilize some of the stadiums? I live in Orlando. Some of the stadiums that are dormant all year round, except for basketball and what have you. But wouldn't you think that if the Rangers and Tampa or the Rangers and somebody else came in for a two-game set, and whether it be another city in the United States, don't you think you would get the same thing out of it than you would going outside the country?
Well, Howard, that's a good question. I think that there's reasons why we play in Europe to grow the game. We have a lot of Europeans playing our league, and we're trying to grow the game over in Europe. That's an area that probably Gary Bettman would be better at discussing than myself. But I do know, having been around for a while, that we have had neutral site games in a lot of various cities. One year, I think it was after the first lockout, every team was required to play two neutral site games with the Rangers. I was at that time, and we played games in Eastern Canada. There were games in a lot of neutral sites. It's not an easy thing to do, to put a game on in an arena that's not used to having a game, with the things that are required, the netting above the glass, a lot of different things that put on a game, the wiring, the overhead, high-def cameras. I could go on and on and on, so it's not an easy thing to play a neutral site game. A lot of neutral site games are played, for example, in exhibition, and the teams try to take their games to neutral sites to perhaps drum up some interest and produce some revenue, and as you said, to maybe bring their team to some places that don't have hockey. And as I said, we have a lot of challenges with that. And I remember one time we did have one neutral site game recently, where Buffalo took one of their games to Rochester, and again we had a lot of challenges with the location itself, the rink, and to measure up to NHL qualifications and what we needed.
All right, let's take another call.
Rob from Needville, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. First of all, I want to say I'm pretty new to the sport, only been really watching it and learning it for the past 5 years. I live in a location where I can actually go and see the Penguins an hour and a half away in Pittsburgh, and I can go to Erie and watch the Erie Otters in the Ontario Hockey League. You know, they're 45 minutes away. I noticed there's a lot of rules that are different for each league. I just wondered if the NHL and the OHL kind of get together and are going to make like the same rules, because I'm trying to teach like my wife and the kids the sport as I'm learning, and it's kind of hard when we go to the different games and that there are different rules for the NHL and the OHL. Is there anytime soon anything going to be happening like that where there's going to be similar rules for each league?
Rob, I'm going to turn it over to Colin. He deals quite regularly with the CHL and their rules, and how we deal with asking them to use some of our rules in their league.
Yes, Rob, we deal with Dave Branch, who runs he's a commissioner of the CHL, and his league is the CHL where your Erie Otters play in. And for the most part, our rules are similar. We have an agreement with the CHL where we do fund the CHL somewhat. We give them some development fees, and in turn we talk about rules. They have tried certain rules for us, and we discuss different rules that they use. For example, we have touch icing, they have automatic icing. They don't use the can't change after the faceoff. I don't think they use that rule. They did anyways a couple years ago, and I don't know if they adopted it this year or not, but where you're not allowed to change after an icing. They didn't want young players stuck on the ice, rookie players. There's different reasons because of the age differences, and we work also hand-in-hand with the American Hockey League, and they've tried out some rules for us when it's been appropriate. And right now they're trying the one-minute penalty in overtime. So we work really closely with all the leagues, all the minor leagues, regarding rules. So it's a similar game you're watching, much more similar than probably an IIHF game, a European game. And so there's just a few things because of the different ages, quality of our leagues.
What kind of feedback have you been getting with regards to that one-minute penalty in overtime?
I haven't got a lot of feedback. I know at one point in time we looked at our own stats, and it was really weird. I think there was maybe at that time was back in October, or I should say November, mid-November, end of November, and we checked out our overtime goals, and I was wondering when they were scored, and all of our goals were scored in the first minute of a penalty, any of the power play goals. So you didn't need the second
right.
minute in our league. So they were all scored in the first minute. So that might mean that 4-3s are a pretty dangerous situation in overtime. So.
Well, that does it, guys. We're almost out of time here. How was that experience for you?
Well, it was enjoyable. Coley did most of the work over there, answering the difficult questions. Threw me a couple of softballs, so it was a lot of fun in here.
You guys talked about playing in the 70s and how it was a different time. And we hear so many times nowadays, guys, throw out the term respect. What is, or lack thereof, what does that word mean to you guys when you think of it in hockey terms, both when you played and nowadays?
Well, Mike and I discuss, there's some nights where we have lots of time to talk. I'll be driving home, he'll be driving home after a night, and we're still wired, or the night drags on, and you're into some late games, and you got some time between periods to discuss things. And we've talked about the game today and the game yesterday. And in yesteryear, hockey games, they weren't as organized as they are now. You didn't have the exposure you have now on television. And there were some things that happened in the game of hockey, not only in the National Hockey League, but in junior hockey, that were crazy. And when I hear that respect, players respect each other much more now. They almost have to, with two officials on the ice, two referees, with the coverage you got. We had a player in the other day who we were fining, and he said, well, I didn't think they saw me do that. He said, you can't get away with anything now in the game. And in the past, Jim Gregory tells us there'd be a suspension, a discipline hearing, and it would be 2 weeks later. 2 weeks later, when you had the hearing, the referees would come in. There's hardly any video of it. So I think players respect each other now. They're big, they're fast, they're strong. Things happen. The game has changed in that aspect. But as far as respect, I think the players are much more respectful than where we played. Like, it was pretty mean and crazy back in those old Wild West days. Mike?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, we had hair pulling, spitting, biting, clawing on a regular basis. And as Coley said, there wasn't video of this. The game wasn't policed like it is today. That's basically what our whole department does, is we watch the games to make sure the game's played the way the fans want it played, the way the GMs and the owners expect it to be played. And that's our job. And I think that the product we're putting out there is skillful, it's entertaining, it's fun. At least that's the way I see it. And when I watch games, that's what I'm looking for.
Guys, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Enjoy
Gary
it.
Bettman will be back here next week with Bill Clement. It's the NHL Hour, Sirius 208, XM 204, and NHL.com. Stick around. Phil Esposito and I coming up next in the slot here on NHL Home Ice.
For more podcasts, check out NHL.com. This is NHL Radio.